Welcome to Reframe and Reset Your Career, a podcast to help if you're looking for a job, feeling stuck in your career, or just trying to rediscover your why. I'm your host, Harsha Boralesa, and this podcast came from my passion for neuroscience and psychology and the interaction with career and personal development. I will be interviewing recognized experts and successful professionals and asking them to share the insights and strategies that have helped their careers thrive. Implementing change is not easy and does take time. But I do hope that their stories will inspire you on your path to greater success and fulfillment in your career. Here are some highlights of today's episode.
People get obsessed either with where they want to end up or where they start, and they forget about the journey. And I think the journey is important. And at the heart of innovation is really curiosity. Can I make this thing better, or can I make better things? Managing expectations is key. And if you bring the stakeholders along in the journey, they recognize that you did whatever it is that you could.
Welcome to episode 74 of the Reframe and Reset Your Career podcast. Our guest today is Dr. Jayashree Seth. Before we begin, I wanted to thank all the listeners of the podcast and YouTube channel for their support. I also hope you've had a chance to check out my new website, harshaboralesa.com. Please note that in this episode, we may touch on mental health and wellness topics purely in general terms. If you have specific issues or concerns, please contact a suitable professional. Now back to the show. Jayashree is a corporate scientist at 3M and currently holds 80 patents for a variety of innovations with several additional pending. She joined 3M in 1993 after an MS and PhD in chemical engineering from Clarkson University, New York. She was appointed 3M's first ever chief science advocate in 2018. She is the author of the books The Heart of Science, published by the Society of Women Engineers. All sale proceeds go to scholarships for underrepresented minority women in STEM. She is a sought-after speaker globally on a multitude of topics such as innovation, leadership, and STEM advocacy, and has featured in local, national, and international media. Welcome, Jayashree.
Thank you, Harsha. I'm excited to be here.
Fantastic. So, Jayashree, you're in Minnesota, and actually you're the third person I've had from Minnesota. So clearly there's something about Minnesota in this show.
Wow. That's good to know.
I'm a big fan of Prince, but I'm not sure that I've never mentioned that live apart from the previous. So anyway, that's just an aside. So I'm a big fan of the arts. Is there a performer, song, book, or film which you'd like to share?
Well, I hope you don't mind if it is obscure. Let me bring to the attention of your listeners a song. It's called Life is Like a Donut. And it's a song that memorializes a very important year, 2020. And I know people say it's done, it's gone, let's move on. But in our collective consciousness, no one can deny that 2020 was a really pivotal year, let's say. It brought about immense change. It was hard to reconcile all the losses. So life is like a donut. There'll always be a hole, something that's a missing and tugging at your soul. 2020 created a void, but like the donut metaphor, this hole also serves to make us whole as we move forward with the learnings and losses we have had. So it's a great song. I think the deep, deep meaning is there. I must say that the current singer is not that great. So full disclosure, I wrote the song and I didn't know how to find someone to give voice to it. So I performed it myself, and I did it because it was all for a good cause. 2020 also forced me to dig deep into my own pockets of privilege, and I was compelled to do something that was really outside of my comfort zone. So you can find the song on playitforward.com. Harsha, maybe we can give the link in our episode page.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Download it, all the donations go to United Way, which is an organization that works for the betterment of local communities. So that's the song I want to highlight. And if you happen to know a famous singer, please help me pull this, what I think are beautiful lyrics, out of obscurity. How about that?
No, I just love that, Jayashree. I think it's really interesting when you look back at 2020, if you had access to resources, then definitely the pandemic was a much easier way. You know, it's difficult for everybody, but definitely it was easier if you did have access to resources. If you were able to think differently, try and reimagine the world, that there were a lot of opportunities. And say with the podcast, I had never thought about starting a podcast until the pandemic. And here we are 4 years later. So it's interesting how out of tragedy or bad things, amazing things can arise.
Absolutely. I think we were all pushed out of our sort of cocoons or the lives that we led and forced to think and reflect and act.
Yeah, no, love that. So going back to your background, I believe you come from a family background of engineers, and I didn't really know where Clarkson was, and I looked it on the map, and it's pretty far north. So coming from India to Clarkson, I mean, that must have been a huge culture shock. I mean, I think you'd already left home anyway, but going from the warm of India to the freezing, New York, North New York, that must have been a tough move.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting place. In fact, when I applied in college, the acceptance letter went home and it was like, there's a Potsdam in Germany, but there's a Potsdam in the US, in New York State. And then after looking at the atlas, it was like, wait, is it in Canada? So it is at the very, very northwest tip of New York State, and it's about 20 minutes from the US-Canada border. Very small village, but there are four colleges around there. So big transient population when school is in session. And I ended up in Potsdam because I had literally applied in jest without really knowing anything about the college, which is quite unlike what students do now. But it's a great place and it worked for me because I grew up in a small university town myself. Ours was essentially an engineering town in India. My dad was an engineering professor. My early childhood was actually in Manchester, and I had the same accent as yours, Harsha, at a very young age. And then once my dad's PhD was done in England, we went back to India and settled in this university town. And I was surrounded by engineers and STEM professionals. And we were very strongly, let's just say, encouraged to pursue engineering. And that did have a role to play in me in going down this path. But honestly, I never thought of myself as the science and engineering type. And I talk a lot about my journey in my TEDx talk. Maybe we can put a link to that as well in the show notes. I didn't think that STEM would allow me to do what I wanted to do, which is help people improve lives, make the world a better place, because that's not how STEM fields were represented. But now I know you can do all of that and more. And I have made that message a cornerstone of my advocacy work in my role as first ever chief science advocate, that we need to teach and track and train and typify. We talk about STEM in a different manner to make it more attractive, more welcoming, and more aligned with a sense of purpose. So it can be a path to solving problems creatively and innovatively for improving lives and for the betterment of our world. So Potsdam, New York was a very important part of my journey to getting where I am today.
Yeah, no, love that. I think firstly, some people are so concerned with where they start, but actually it's where you finish, which is far more important. And you're putting all your energy into, say, one college or one graduate opportunity. Obviously it's good to reach for the best, but if things don't work out, that's not the end of the story. And there are so many people, say, on this podcast and who I've met, and I'm sure you've met, who may not have been at sort of name universities, but they end up in these amazing places afterwards. I mean, clearly, I'm sure there must be plenty of MIT people who are highly envious of your situation at 3M. But also, I think the other interesting thing is that if you surround yourself with people who are like-minded, like you were with a lot of STEM people, then that gives you a nice community. And if you're thinking about changing or doing something different, it's quite good to think, okay, I just want to immerse myself with the people who I want to, who I aspire to being. I mean, what do you think, Joshua?
I really like what you said about it's not where you start, where you end up. It's also how you get there. How you get there is what really brings your experiences to life. And it adds so much depth and it enriches your entire experience. So I think people get obsessed either with where they want to end up or where they start, and they forget about the journey. And I think the journey is important. And I can say that now that I look back on my 30 years of professional journey, that it is not where you start or where you end up, but how you traverse through whatever comes in your way.
Fantastic. So obviously you're highly innovative, and I'm so envious that you hold all these patents. So how can our listeners develop their creativity and innovation?
We just talked about journey. I've been very fortunate in my STEM journey. I ended up at 3M with a strong culture of empowerment, an emphasis on collaboration, we just talked about that, and a communal context of improving lives. And I've been able to be very productive. So, for your question, at the heart of innovation is really curiosity. Can I make this thing better, or can I make better things? And if you allow yourself to go down that path, you can empower that inventor, that creator, that innovator that resides in each and every one of us. And mind you, we all have it. We are hardwired. If you're a human, you are hardwired to be that way. We just have to give ourselves permission to be curious. We have to give in to the curiosity and not to shut it down. And we actively do that many times a day. We shut it out. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about this. I don't know. Somebody would have answered that question. I challenge you to think about it, how much we all do it. And another thing that happens naturally, which we shut down or don't pay attention to, is our brain is configured to make uncommon connections. The neurons just fire and they do it for us, but we ignore it, especially if it seems uncommon. Just write it down when it comes to you. Random things. You know, I saw a jar of candy and it reminds me of a tennis ball machine at the court. Strange connection, but just write it down. Or read about the challenges somebody is having in managing traffic, and it makes you think about a systems issue from some other podcast that you were listening to. It's never about the specific ideas per se, but the idea of tuning into the connections that your brain is making for you. And it's offering it up to you. It just does it. And we don't give it space many times, but if you want to cultivate creativity, you should, and the brain will deliver. I promise, I've experienced it. You may not need a certain idea at that time, but it will light up when you do. It's literally that light bulb. And I know how it happens because I've felt it many times. So that's important, to give in to your curiosity and the connections. Next is listening and learning. You have to listen, you have to learn. Let's say you're in finance, listen to arts. If you're in arts, listen to science. You know, hyper-specialization of our professions has some benefits, but it doesn't mean that we don't educate ourselves and collectively sort of understand other fields. And many of my ideas for the frameworks that I develop, they come from philosophy, and I'm a scientist, or they come from humanities and social and behavioral science. So best ideas come at the confluence or the intersection or the Venn diagram of really seemingly disparate subjects. So listening and learning with a larger radius, it's critical. Next, if you want to really sort of jumpstart your creativity, is what I call action, inaction, reaction, and reflection. So as you know, I've thought a lot about this and I write about this. Think about things when you're actively doing them. That's the action piece. Like, don't mindlessly do them. Just actually think about, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? How am I doing it? How could I do it better? Think about things when you're doing nothing. So do nothing. Like, give yourself the chance to do nothing. And for me, what it means is taking a walk in nature, and I do it every single day. That's my do nothing, and my best ideas come at that point. Next is reaction. Notice your own reaction to things: frustration, excitement, gratitude, anticipation. You know, those are the feelings when the reasoning that can give you creative ideas. And finally, reflection is actively thinking about a topic, reflecting upon what you know, what it means, and soon enough, ideas start coming. Why not this? Why not that? How about this? How about that? And sometimes we get so busy doing that we make it mindless. So I want to make sure we do it mindfully and we can jumpstart creativity and innovation. So action, inaction, reaction, reflection. And finally, the easiest one, passion and purpose. Just really keying into that. You will have so many ideas because this is something that drives you. You want to do it. You will gather perspective. You will challenge paradigms. You will push boundaries because you're passionate about this. It's your purpose. It's your why. So those are sort of the tips and tricks for training the brain that I often give people. And believe me, the brain supports you and its exercise pays off.
I love all those points you're making, and it's interesting, I think, the idea of looking at different fields. Because, say, with Steve Jobs, I love the thing he was talking about, that he did that calligraphy course and that went into the different fonts. And then I think if you're taking action, I think it's sometimes about making these small experiments, these small bets, but it's just trying something, see does it work, doesn't it? And then, it's an iterative process. But also this idea of challenging the status quo, because I think sometimes people think what's happened in the past has to continue. But actually, with a lot of, say, tech, it's about disruption and changing it and saying, okay, why do we need to do it this way? Can we do it a better way? Can we do it a simpler way? So I think I love all those points you're making. And I think that will be really helpful for our listeners. Now, moving on to sort of experimenting and learning. And I think obviously as a scientist, you're doing a lot of that. So how can our listeners use this to develop their careers? I think you've suggested some things. But especially I think the role of managing and learning from failure in the innovation process, because clearly that happens a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Science, by its very nature, is iterative, and there is really no failure of your will. Either you were able to prove the hypothesis or you were not. So, what did you learn? What do you recommend? That's the scientific method. And by virtue of that, scientists are typically very comfortable with the unknown. They can say, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I've looked at this. Now I have a hypothesis. I will generate data. I will analyze, I'll communicate results, recommendations, decide what to do next. Now, same can't be said for many other fields. People are not that comfortable with not knowing. They deem it as a huge risk. And if it doesn't work the way they wished for it to work, it's a failure. So I really think what you are highlighting is a very important point. Emulating this scientific approach, the scientific method, can benefit career development because you can just adopt a mindset of continuous experimentation and learning. We'll set clear goals, we'll test and refine strategies, we'll embrace curiosity, we'll be willing to explore new skills or areas, and we'll evaluate progress and adjust the approach based on the outcomes. That's the iterative process, and that'll foster personal growth, but also enhance your adaptability, which is a very valuable trait in any career. And linking it to your question about failure, let's talk about failure. That is that you didn't get the desired outcome. I've had many of those. I can even share one of the biggest projects I worked on, and for the longest time, so 3+ years, with a key customer, big opportunity, and at the end of the day, $0 to show for it. And it didn't work because of a complete turnaround in strategy with leadership change at the customers. It happens. Is it a failure? Some of my projects did not work out because of the technology that couldn't be scaled up within the manufacturing constraints we had. Is that a failure? Some we couldn't do because the product or the placement or the pricing in our portfolio, we just couldn't sell enough. Not as much as we thought we would. Customer had issues. It happens. Is that a failure? Or because of a market situation? I think it's not a failure if you learn something. We built technology building blocks. And in my case, the technology building blocks that we built in my 3-year project that didn't go anywhere, these technology building blocks then went into other 3M products. And they made extremely successful products. So I communicated with stakeholders often and was very transparent about where we were, how we were progressing, issues that we were having, and if they had any suggestions, bring it on. So no one could deny that we were going down the right path. And even afterwards, I would tell the story of what we learned and why it's so important. And the story was always about our efforts, lesson learned, how would we do it differently, if at all, and the so-called failure. See, we can only learn if we act. And if we act, we can fail. Of course, if you don't act, you can fail too because you just failed to innovate. So failure can also provide valuable insights and sometimes the lessons that success even is not able to convey. So embracing failure is sort of part of the learning journey. You build resilience, adaptability, willingness to take risk. And these are all qualities that are essential for innovation and for career growth.
No, I just love that. And I don't know if you've come across this concept of the Stockdale paradox, Jim Collins, good to great. And I like that idea of almost bending reality and saying, okay, we are in this situation, but actually you can see the opportunities. And I think in a way with life or with overcoming failure or suboptimal results, it's about thinking, okay, we are where we are now, but there is a path to a better future. And I think having that mindset is it can be very helpful. But the other point I really like that you mentioned was this idea of communication, because I do think you have to be very mindful if things are not going quite in the way you expect to communicate, okay, this is what I've done or the team has done. These are the successes we've got. We've got this new technology, but there are these other issues which are stopping us from, monetizing it or create or actually getting profit out of it. So, I mean, clearly, if you did nothing in terms of communication for 3 years, that would not have been a good situation, but you kept people in the loop. So I think it's also about managing expectations. I mean, what do you think, Jayshree?
Spot on. Managing expectations is key. And if you bring the stakeholders along in the journey, they recognize that you did whatever it is that you could. You involved them. You're not just jumping this on them that it's not working or whatever. That transparency helps. The commitment helps. And then you also have the stakeholders who understand that there are certain situations that are within our control and certain that are not. What would you do if your key customer came to you with such a great opportunity? You would work on it. How can you possibly call it a failure? So the other hidden part about the stakeholder management is who controls the narrative, the ever important narrative.
No, I love that point about narrative, because I think if you can create a compelling narrative about anything, and I'm not saying you're manipulating the situation, but there is a way of presenting things. As you're saying, you've got successes, you've done well, but it may not have gone exactly the way you want. I mean, clearly there's huge amounts of value, but you have to be able to have a story and communicate that story to people, especially internally. And I think people are reasonable when they hear, okay, this is what we've done, this is the value that's been created. But if it's just about the failure, then that's not good. So yeah, I think that's such an important point you've made. And then sort of going on to this idea of mosaic building, which you've proposed in the context of innovation. I love this thing. And I think sometimes in life as well, it's about taking bits of things to from different places and putting it together. And you can use this in a finance context. I mean, clearly we're not giving financial advice or investing advice, but I think it's applicable to many different areas of our lives and our careers. But maybe can you talk a little bit about this? Because I just love that concept.
Great. I like that you've done your homework. Let me bring my mosaic building methodology out of obscurity now. Actually, it's not obscure. Many of your readers might have read David Epstein's book Range.
Right.
So turn to page 206 when you're in the airport bookstore next. He actually talks about me and my mosaic building.
Cool.
It was an honor to be interviewed by him, and it's exciting to be featured in his book. I will admit, whenever I'm at the airport bookstore, I look it up and feel good about it. And I talk about mosaic building in my writings and interviews and podcasts. So basically, I believe that when we get information or have an idea, it is like having a singular tile. And what one needs to do is to assemble a mosaic around that tile. So you need a lot more tiles of information to get a better picture. So let's say I have an idea for a product. I essentially collect tiles of information and assemble this mosaic. And it's a mosaic, not a puzzle. In a puzzle, all pieces fit exactly so. In a mosaic, it's more organic. You can place the tiles anywhere. And I look at the mosaic to figure out the story it is telling me. Because first, I need to convince myself that it's an idea worth pursuing. And it's an idea worth championing. Only then can I convince others. So mosaic building becomes like investigative journalism first. You are finding sources, you are uncovering information, you're pulling together data. Then you become a detective. You're asking a lot of questions, tracking down, leads and observing clues. Then you're an artist, you're putting all these pieces together and seeing the mosaic that evolves. And then you're developing a compelling narrative. We just talked about it. You're developing a compelling narrative out of that. And that has to be done like a deft storyteller because you need to be able to convince yourself and others that this is a problem worth solving. Then it's about presenting the case, somewhat like a lawyer does. And it is critical then to be inspiring others to join the cause in a true leader style. Then you have expert craftsmen. You're working and collaborating as a team on specific tasks, and you're using the right tools. You're identifying the building blocks that are needed, to solve this problem. You're advancing the science in the lab for inventing the technical solution. And all of this allows you to paint the vision of where to go next. So you are going from individual tile to innovation tales, and that's the story that sticks. And with all the change in the world, the tiles are constantly evolving and needed to be, readjusted or replaced. And I take the stakeholders with me on this journey of uncovering tiles, of putting them together, readjusting, rearranging, building the story, and get them to focus on the learning we're having. Then they see how it enriches the journey, and it kind of moves them away from this march to the end destination, project deliverables, date and time and reviews. That's all great, but when they are inspired by the learning and the story, then they can really become champions. Otherwise, they're just not interested in the detail, and they hold the team back with this set date and agenda. And unfortunately, that's not how things work in real life. So you'll have setbacks, you'll have slips in dates, you'll have some curveball thrown at you. So it's important to keep the focus on the mosaic and not singular tiles. And I think it's really powerful in making stakeholders more interested in the journey, not just fixation on that destination. So the way I see it is the mosaic building allows them to see the possibilities, not just a product at hand. It makes them see the trends, not just the current status of a technology. It makes them see our commitment to the marketplace, not just a singular customer. And it makes them see the passionate people, not just some process they can use to churn innovation.
No, I think there's some amazing points that you're making there. If you can figure out what you're trying to do and then tell somebody else, because I think you can have it in your head, but until you actually speak to somebody about this and say, look, this is what I'm trying to achieve, and then ask them to repeat it back. And I think that's something that Sheena Iyengar, who is a professor, I think, at Columbia, she talks about that. So, I just love the way you describe that in your process. And then this idea, I think, of making your colleagues really passionate about what you're doing. Because I think if they feel empowered and they feel they have agency, then they're willing to sort of go beyond, the sort of the 9 to 5 or 9 to 6, and they'll keep thinking about it. And as we were talking about before, it's when they're thinking about it, then they go offline. Then that's when the real genius moments come to you, because your brain is working sort of offline. So I love all those points you're making. And I think the final one is looking at the market, because if you're, rather than thinking, I've got to create this technology, if you create technology in isolation to the market, that's not so useful. What are your thoughts, Jayshree?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want a quick hit or a quick win or a disruptive innovation? But all of those things require a lot of mosaic level commitment. And it's not just to a singular project, it's something that you're doing that is going to possibly disrupt the marketplace. So there's a lot more to think about. And we often get beholden to puzzle thinking. Everything fits, everything fits, everything fits. And the idea is to move people away from that black and white puzzle thinking to mosaic thinking. Move them from what they think they can orchestrate to a lot of things that happen organically. Also, move people from the me to the we. Mosaic building helps with that. It's not about just me, it's about we, what we can do collectively. And it's a fine balance, it's a give and take. But really, mosaic building to me has been the art of applying science to life and really driving innovation in an ever-changing world.
Yeah, fantastic. And actually, sort of leading on from that, this whole idea of uncertainty, because clearly the world is changing faster and faster. So how can people learn to become comfortable with discomfort and become comfortable with change? Where there's change, there's also massive opportunity, and you can take advantage of it.
I think it's the same strategy as the theme for your podcast. You have to reframe and you need to reset. Especially since 2020 with the pandemic, change accelerated in many ways. As as people changed, our expectation changed, business environment changed, working styles changed. So all in all, a lot of change that even catalyzed more change. And adapting to change involves a flexible mindset and a process of embracing continuous learning. And we all know how to do it. We've done it. We did it during the pandemic. So we need to keep the positive learnings from that experience. However it is that we were able to withstand that change, whatever positive that happened at that point, that rapid pace of change, the high uncertainty, you know, you can use those skills that you saw during that time period. And it could be reframing change as an opportunity, like you said. It could be becoming more curious or open to new ideas. Hey, I'm going to start a podcast, you know, actively seeking to understand what is going on around you. It could be developing more resilience or staying proactive to help you navigate uncertainty, or embracing change as a chance to acquire new skills, expand your network, explore uncharted territories, you know, ultimately allowing you to not just survive, but thrive. And so much has been written about as we emerged from the pandemic. People did develop new skills. They did get a new outlook, a new lease on life as a result of that experience. So we need to embrace that mindset. And I tell people the best way to adjust to change, if you're really struggling, is to try and lean into it. And there's three ways you can do it. If you're worried about the new normal, force yourself to anticipate what will be next. Yeah. Force yourself to think about what you're worried about, right? Because you're worried about the new normal. Force yourself to anticipate what will be next and see if any actionable insights can come from that. If you're worried about vulnerabilities that the change exposes, lean into that. Think about what old truths may get challenged and what strategic foresight does that give you. And finally, if you don't know what to do about the change, then lean into what you can control. And what can you change in that short window of time? What is within your own operational oversight that you can simplify? Then do it. So do it now. I say N is for new normal, O is for old truths, and W is for window of opportunity. And that'll get you to actionable insight, strategic foresight, and control of what is within your operational oversight. That's what I write about and tell people. And I love acrostic frameworks, if you haven't figured it out. I just think they make the concepts and frameworks more memorable. I've been called the queen of acronyms, just saying.
Actually, Vanessa Patrick, who I think you listened to that episode that I did with her, she has a lot of acronyms as well. So I think you two would get on really well.
Yes, I did reach out to her, actually.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. No, she's great. Sort of moving more on to, you know, your career. Yeah. How do you think people can, say, stand out from their peers, say, firstly, in an interview scenario, and secondly, if they want to get promoted at work? Do you maybe have a couple of points that have helped you, maybe, Jayshree, in your career?
I'm not an expert in this, but what I tell people is a resume is a one-dimensional piece of paper or a digital document.
Yeah.
And I like to say you have to resume the conversation that it starts. I love play on words also, by the way. You know, when in doubt, I go to the origin of the word. Actually, resume essentially means a summary, a sum of your work. So when you're being interviewed, they are summing you up and wondering what is on that paper. Does it add up? Actually, curriculum vitae, that CV, it means course of one's life.
Life, yeah.
So in an interview, you have to bring it to life. You have to show your depth, your dimension. You have to contextualize your education, your expertise, your experiences. You have to talk about the breadth and the variety and the reach. You have to tie in personal and professional. They should see it come alive in a crisp way because you don't got time. So you have to crystallize it well. So bottom line is you have to prepare. You have to prepare. It needs to be grounded in credibility. And it needs to be memorable. And on the note of memorable, forget about who you are competing against, because you need to focus on yourself and your future employer first. You need to know everything about yourself that you can, everything about the job that you're interviewing for. And through your personal narrative about your personal background, experiences, and interests, make it seem like the best fit possible for them. That would be my recommendation. I think it's not that much about standing out. It's more about standing up your case, because many a times you won't know who you are standing against. So that sit.
No, I love that. And I think, yeah, it's that whole idea of looking at yourself. What is it that makes you unique? And how also can you add value to that company? And what about your experience makes you a good fit, makes you be able to hit the ground running, be able to add value? Do you have clients which similar to they have, or, you know, so I think it's really, as you're saying, about doing the research and coming across as best as possible.
Yeah. And it's kind of similar in the way, if you want to get promoted, you have to do good work. You have to talk about your work and why it's good. And again, this isn't trivial. To do good work, you need to understand what does good work entail in that organization. So you're back to research, right? You have to talk about your work. But you need to have an audience. Why would anyone invite you? Why do you get any attention? Who gets an audience and how can I get there? And finally, you have to understand why your work is good. Especially the audience may be different each time, and that takes a lot of critical thinking and questioning, and it makes you better at what you're doing. So sounds simple, but in that simplicity lies the profundity of that statement. Do good work, talk about your work and why it's good. And in both cases, interview or promotion, I have to say something else, Harsha. Let's not forget luck does have a role to play. Whether it's a singular interview or an entire career, absolutely. And I don't care who it is and what they say. Luck and chance are a real thing. They play a critical role in our life and career trajectory. So don't let it get to your head if you do make it, and don't get your head down if you don't.
And I love this point about sort of creating this digital footprint, because say, you know, in our interaction, you know, I hadn't come across to you and you kindly reached out. And whenever anybody reaches out who I don't really sort of know that well, I'll, you know, do a Google search, you know, check out their credibility. And if you go online, you know, obviously you've got all these patents, you've got your TED talk, you've written extensively, you've been on podcasts with other people. And I think it's about creating that digital footprint so that it's creating that credibility about somebody. So, you know, I mean, clearly I have an obligation to my listeners, and I think they will be, you know, so happy that, you know, you found me and then we managed to get this together. So I think, as you're saying, it's about creating this brand, personal brand, which clearly you've done amazingly well. Obviously, you've written the books. So I love the way that you've done that, you know, created this narrative about yourself, but you don't seem to have done it in a sort of too self-promotional way. It is, the work is there, the articles are there, the podcasts are there, and it's adding great value. So I think that's a really good lesson for all our listeners out there.
Yeah, I think rooted in credibility, grounded in authenticity. Without that, I think most people have a pretty good radar, and they can tell. And so I think it's important, whether you're trying to get a job or trying to get promoted or trying to create a thought leadership platform, it has to be grounded in authenticity and it has to be credible.
Cool. And sort of moving on to leadership, because, I mean, clearly you have got into a fantastic position. And I think for a lot of our listeners, they are, say, good at the technical side, but maybe leadership doesn't come naturally to them. So what about you, Jayshree? Were you a born leader?
I think it's an interesting question. I say that because a lot of things become more evident when you look back. And when I look back over my 30-year career, I can see that there were certain things I observed, I did. I learned that really helped me along the way to build my sort of leadership philosophy, I want to say. And I'm still a work in progress. So first, I should point out for your listeners that I'm not a people leader. I'm not a manager. I've never been in that. I do not have anyone reporting to me. But does that mean I don't have an opportunity to lead or develop my leadership skills? Not true. I have realized everyone can lead from what I call their own rung of the ladder. And that also requires leadership skills. For me, the journey has been all about the I, literally and figuratively. The true essence of leadership is being able to inform, influence, and inspire. And they all begin with I. And I've tried to do that in my career journey, you know, driving innovation, another I word from the trenches. And what bookends these three I's, in my view, the inform, influence, and inspire, is initiative and impact. I always took initiative and I was driven to have an impact. And that I've had ever since I was a child. So I learned skills along the way that helped me to do that as I gained insights to bolster the ability to inform, influence, and hopefully inspire. So it's things like mosaic building, communication, collaboration, commitment, and doing it authentically so. That has really helped me along the way. And the way I think about careers is that it's not just about where you go, it's about what you do and how you do it. So it's the footprints, the fingerprints, but also the imprints that you leave on hearts and minds. To me, that's true leadership.
Cool. And I think this idea of taking initiative is so powerful, because I think even if you're a junior, like, go speak to your manager or a colleague. That may not be the sort of silver bullet, but the whole idea that you've thought about it, it's the logic, your thought process. I think that will really impress people.
Spot on, spot on. The more initiative that you take, the better the initiative muscle gets. It gets easier and easier. The one thing that separates most people, going back to that question about getting promoted and getting, is the sense of initiative, taking initiative, doing things that you thought were important to do, and not waiting for committees and not waiting for permission and not waiting for God knows what sign, just doing it. That sense of initiative, I know, has played an extremely big role in my career.
Fantastic. So moving on to your books, so what inspired you to write them, and what are the key messages that our listeners should take from them?
Yes, thanks for mentioning my books. So inspiration, why did I decide to write these? We have already talked a lot about 2020. It was a tough year. And like many, I really struggled when the raw and really revealing events happened over Memorial Day weekend, right in our backyard in Minnesota, right in Minneapolis. And I'm, of course, referring to the George Floyd killing. And it was hard. It actually made me sort of go existential. Who am I? What do I stand for? What is my role in this? What has it been? What it should be? So I dug deep and took some actions, and one of them was I put many of my essays into a book that was then published by Society of Women Engineers. So that's The Heart of Science Engineering: Footprints, Fingerprints, and Imprints, and all proceeds, like you said, go to the scholarship for underrepresented minority women in STEM. Actually, the book came first, and I was super excited and proud that I had done that. That's when my kids said, "Oh, it's great that I wrote a book," but to my surprise, they didn't think it was that big a deal. It was something that they would have expected of mommy, and it wasn't outside my comfort zone. And that's actually what led to the song, because I wanted to show my kids that if you have good intentions, you derive comfort from that when you're outside your comfort zone. So I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for someone else. So I'm not afraid to sing. So anyway, back to the book. So my book is out. The pandemic lockdown is opening up. The universe conspires. And believe it or not, I get invited to give the Silas Ethics Lecture at Georgia Tech. And guess where the first scholar funded from the sales proceeds of my book was going to school? Georgia Tech. So I actually got to meet her. It was an emotional experience for me. And I was like, wow, one person can make a difference because others join in. And I was like, I can't stop here. So I decided to do the second book. So the first book in the Now Heart of Science series is a collection of essays on big picture topics, from my experiences as an engineer, a parent, a science advocate, a thought leader. And I cover themes such as the need for STEM advocacy, the convergence of STEM and humanities, leading from your own rung of the ladder, like we discussed, and developing a growth context. And what is at the heart of my second book, which is called Engineering Fine Print, is an attempt to go deeper on the topic of transitions to thrive and survive amidst change, reflections to provide perspective, and insights into actions we can all take. So those are the two books. And on the topic of action, please buy the books and don't forget to give a 5-star review on Amazon, because as some of you know, that helps elevate the book. And since it's not a standard publishing house, we don't have many ways to get noticed. And it's a win-win because it's all for a good cause. And I'm happy to inform you that enough people joined this cause, enough people bought the books, that we now have four students, four young women whose STEM journey is being supported through the sales proceeds of the two books. So here I am currently working on my third book, final in the trilogy, and this one will be called Engineering Blueprint. And this will have a lot of my frameworks brought to life in a workbook fashion. So I'm very excited about this experiment. And I urge your listeners to follow me on LinkedIn, and I'll be sharing when the book is released. And I encourage you all to buy and give the gift of education. Honestly, it's the best gift you can give.
And Jayshree, when is it coming out?
I'm thinking that it'll be in the next 3 months.
Well, let me know, and I'll make sure we circulate that to our listeners, and make sure that we try and help you push that out. But I like
That would
the
be
other
amazing.
thing. No problem. But I think the other interesting thing that you sort of brought up is this whole idea of sort of visibility. In a way, I think when you see people like yourself doing these amazing things, and I'm sure that they're people who young aspiring engineers who see what you're doing, and they think, wow, if and I'm not saying it's easy to get to where you are, but it does make it possible. And sometimes we have these limitations in our own mind. And it's interesting, you were talking about growing up in a family of engineers. So I grew up in a family of doctors. So everybody I saw was a doctor, but I didn't go down that path. But looking back on it, so my mum was an anaesthetist, and all her friends, female friends, were anaesthetists as well. So you're thinking, wow, it's quite normal for women to be anaesthetists. And my dad was a haematologist. And I think it's really interesting, the whole idea of, okay, this is, I mean, clearly these are hard things. And but if you see people who are doing these things, it's quite inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the reason why we also created at 3M this docuseries called Not the Science Type. Because we want to break away from the stereotypes and we want to say there's all kinds of people, and science will be better off for that. So science needs you to be you. Bring that diversity of thought, bring that diversity of experiences. And that's what will lead to more innovation and the innovation that the world needs, science-based, scalable, sustainable innovation. So we're very excited about the kind of things that we have done. We feel they're very innovative, creating a role like mine and then really giving our advocacy some strong legs based on research that we do around public perception of science. We also sponsored research with Indiana University on understanding how to increase belonging in STEM. I'm so super excited that in addition to 80 patents and lots of journal articles in science STEM journals, now I also have a Nature publications on social science, So it's kind of like bringing these different things together so that we can support the enterprise of science in a more robust and holistic way.
Fantastic. So, Jeffrey, we're coming up to the end of our time, and you love this conversation and love all the ideas that you shared with us. And I think there are a lot of very powerful messages there. So, obviously, you mentioned that you're on LinkedIn. How else can our listeners get hold of you?
LinkedIn is the best place. I'm very active there, much to my adult kids' chagrin. They're always like, "Oh my gosh, look at what she posted," and they're discussing that. But I keep telling them that, that's how you share what you're thinking about. And at this point, it just is a conversation starter sometimes. So I'm on LinkedIn all the time. That's the best way to reach out. And then, of course, buy the books, listen to the podcasts, and spread the word on these ideas, because I sometimes feel like I have a unique perspective that hasn't been shared. I'm not a people leader. I'm not a manager. I'm somebody who is driving innovation from the trenches.
Fantastic. But you should tell your kids that I certainly appreciate you taking the time and sharing your ideas. And I think sometimes when you're too close to the person, that you can't get perspective. So it's like with my parents, it's only later on that you finally get, wow, they've done some amazing things. And especially when I think third parties say, oh my God, your mom, she's amazing, or your father's amazing, that you fully appreciate they have done some great things. So I think your children need to look at you in a different way, give you more
Yes, no,
love.
they have. I have a friend who told me that they said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of my mom." So I live for that.
Very good. Excellent. And one final thing, Jeffrey, is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to who's helped you in your life or your career? I mean, clearly, I think your husband, who also works at 3M, and you worked on the same bit of kit when you were at Clarkson, or you're
We were
researching
in the
something?
same lab. We were in the same lab.
Okay.
And we had to use one piece of equipment, and so my story is my option was to fight him or marry him, and he says I did both. So yes, shout out to my husband, he's amazing. My kids, they show me the mirror, and we all need such people in our lives that make you think, reflect really on what you think, is something that is the foundation of your thought process. So I really enjoy having that in the family. And hats off to my parents. they thought that I would be, better off going in science, and I wouldn't have opted for that. But I was able to bring in my skills and interests into science, and that's what has led to my success. So sometimes other people do know better than you do at a certain point, and I keep that in my mind as well. And then amazing people at 3M who have supported me, who I've worked with, and it's just a great, great experience.
Fantastic. So li listen to your parents is the message. They know
Can
best.
you please tell my kids? My
Jayshree,
adult kids.
thank you so much for your time. Really loved our conversation. You're very inspiring. And I'm sure our listeners will be inspired by your journey, the work that you're doing, and actually all those acronyms.
Thank you so much for having me, Harsha.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening and staying to the end. That was such a fun interview. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please subscribe to the podcast, which is available on your favorite providers, and subscription is free. If you wish to learn more about any of the resources mentioned in this episode, please take a look at the show notes, which are available online. Thanks once again for listening. Wishing you success with your career. I hope you will join me again in the future.